Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Tulsa Time by Don Williams. A little Oklahoma, if not Oklahoma City music, to honor the Thunder's win last night.
All right, I wasn't here yesterday, so I wasn't able to talk about the trade. I have listened to what you had to say yesterday, both and on this show and on the podcast. I'd urge people to go listen to the podcast if they haven't, that he did with Drew. And the piece today that you wrote about possible, the Grizzlies' ammunition that they've assembled and possible trade targets that they have. Before we get to that, though, I heard you say best player they've traded since Powell. I made the point, I don't think they've ever really made a trade like this, which is one of their best players at a time when they are still trying to contend. I think maybe the Shane trade for Rudy Gay, they didn't know they were going to be terrible the next year. They still had Powell. They were trying to be good, just differently. When they traded Rudy, that was different. Like, they was a good player while they were still trying to contend, but that was a pure money deal. So I do think
it
this
was not,
is...
It was not a pure money deal.
Well, they got... Go ahead.
They wanted to reroute touches more towards... They wanted to elevate Mike Conley. Right. It was partly a money deal. They wanted to reroute touches towards Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. At the time that trade happened, people thought, like, Mark and Mike were, like, the third and fourth dudes on the team.
Right.
The new front office that had come in wanted to make the team about those guys. And so it was not just a financial, a lot of people thought that, but it was not purely a financial move on the Rudy Gay trade. Rudy Gay thing is somewhat similar, but I think Bane's better.
Yeah. The motivation was financial. I'll say that. But in the end, you're right. In a sense, in that way, it's, and they got a player in Tayshaun Prince back. Who they got Austin Day, I think, right too, and whatever, and Tayshaun Prince, who was
I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. Months before that trade happened, I don't think he'd mind me saying this at this point. Months before that trade happened, John Hollinger, who was not thinking about the money,
right,
told me, like, after our games, like, we got to get the ball in the hands of Mike Conley and Marc Gasol more.
Right.
And so that was a big driver of that.
So it's funny because what I said yesterday was the only two trades that are sort of like this are the two Rudy Gay trades, getting him and trading him away, where they traded a good player and they were still trying to contend. So this is kind of a different deal. Normally we see good traders trade on a teardown. This isn't something we've seen a lot in Grizzlies history. Is it fair, Chris, to judge based on how they use this? In other words, let's take the Steven Adams trade, right? You can judge that. They got the pick that they got, and then they used it on a player in Zaire Williams who was a bust. So does that, how they use that pick, factor into the how good or bad that trade was? And conversely, will how they use this ammunition factor into how good or bad this trade was?
Well, I mean, what matters is what happens. I guess I'm more interested in like what happens than like what the judgment is about what happens. Like it's just not the mind frame I think of it as. I'm here to pass judgment and to like give them an A or a B or a C or whatever. And so they've done what they've done. And now what matters.
What matters is what they
think that. And specifically with this, this was a trade designed to lead to other things. It's not a challenge trade. It was not we're flipping Bane for this player and we like this player better. It was we're flipping Bane in the pursuit of some other thing. And there's more work to be done to get to wherever that's going to be.
Will it be, I think it will not be a quote unquote failure. If they pick at 16, it will be the way that they'll still have other ways they can get better and get real players, real experienced players on the roster. I take it you won't consider it a failure if they pick at 16. What are your?
I honestly am not trying to be difficult. I don't even understand the question. Why would it be a failure to pick at 16?
Well, because I'll tell you why. The question would be, my God, we don't need a. Maybe it's I think it's a sign of health that you don't listen to sports talk radio, Chris, because it's we don't need a young player on this team if they pick at 16.
That just becomes a thing people say because it's a thing people say, and people say the things that people are saying. Whatever. There's a totality of this, right? It's not about one thing, and it's the totality of what they do, and that's not gonna. It probably won't even all happen this summer. I actually think that's a more pertinent question. Like, to what degree are you aggressive this summer? To what degree do you wait, and the cost benefit of that? In terms of the pick at 16, like the idea. It's about making your team better, like however you can do it. And it's about adding talent, however you can do it. The idea that, like, you know, you would rather have a 28-year-old player who's no good than a 20-year-old player who is good just doesn't really make sense to me. I think the draft is a way to pop with talent more so than trade, although sometimes it happens with trade. But for a player to become better, you know, after you acquire them, that tends to happen more so in the draft than it does via trade. 16 is sort of high enough that you could envision like getting someone who's like a lot better than where you picked them. And I think taking a swing on talent with that opportunity is not something the team should shy away from at all. Now, that said, I think there's a 50-50 chance at best they pick a player at 16, because I think there's so many things that could happen with that pick.
Right.
They could move up. They could move back. They could pair it with, you know, the Coanthe contract and like trade it for a player. I think they should keep every single one of those paths wide open.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. One of the things that it's funny because literally that could have irritated you too, because one of the things you brought up in your piece today was that the pieces that they have assembled do not require them. You know, that there is a little bit of a longer time frame on this, and they could do it trade deadline. They could do it next year because of the contracts that they got.
They could.
But frustrate.
At the same time, the clock's ticking, right? Like, you know, and so if they do move forward trying to reframe the team around John Moran and Jaren Jackson, and I think that is the intent. Now, they still have contract issues potentially with both of those guys that existed before this trade and still exist, and that will govern maybe what their ultimate direction is. But if they move forward trying to reshape the team around those two guys, which I think is what they intend to do, like, you know, there's a potentially real question of timing versus quality, right? I would frame it this way. Like, if you have a move that's available to you this summer that from a talent standpoint, you would grade it, say, a B, right? But you're having to use a decent portion of your assets you have.
Yep.
Do you do the B move now in the fear that now we've used these assets, we can't use them for an A-level move at the trade deadline? But what if you wait and all you're left with at the trade deadline is a C-level move, right? I think there's a real push and pull to all this that they're going to have to navigate.
Well, it's not unlike, honestly, the push and pull that Orlando faced, right? Like, in the end, they had this asset that is the 16th pick, which is valuable, right? And then they have the Suns pick, whatever. But in the end, once you make that pick, it's kind of less like at some point you pull the trigger, right? Was Desmond Bane the best that they could ever get with all their? But at some point you say, you know what? We have our core here. It's time to go roll to put the stuff together and get Desmond Bane. And so It's a little bit. It strikes me as a little bit in terms of what they could do with the
Well, hey, look at the Grizzlies' own history, right? Like, yeah. like they tried to make all kinds of trades they couldn't make, and maybe they could have pushed in more in some of those, maybe not, and gotten them done. And they finally push in enough to get the deal done, but it's the Marcus Smart deal,
right?
And that's the one. When retrospect, you wish you would have waited longer, right, for something different. And so that's the tricky part of it.
It is funny. I've literally heard another talker once in the last couple of days say the Grizzlies never did anything. And it's just not true. They did things. They didn't work out, and that was the most obvious thing that they did. They went all in, and it cost them three picks to get on, to acquire and then get rid of Marcus Smart. In terms of the things they could do with this pick, one is make it, obviously.
Yeah.
Trading up seems unlikely, although it is interesting. Like, when you look at the just a first cut at the draft, I've seen a lot of, you sort of see a lot of Carter Bryant talk. And, whatever, we're all becoming familiar with our names now. Carter Bryant. Most people don't think he's going to be there at 16.
I think of the four paths I just sort of spit out, I do think trading up is the least likely of the four. I do think that's true. But I would not rule it out just because they have this excess of picks now, and it's kind of like it's the classic Oklahoma City move. Like, what do you do with all these picks? Like, you use them to move up and get the guy you want in the draft, right? Now, the Grizzlies have done that a lot, too. You know, they did have Jake LaRavia. That didn't really work out either. But I think you have to keep the paths open and make the whatever you think is the best decision. And, like, if there's a guy at 12 who you think has a chance to, like, be an all-star level player or a quality starting level player, and it costs you, like, the 16 and one future first to get that guy, and you think that guy's a better chance of being a high-quality starter than anybody you can trade, you know, those picks for, you know, two picks and a contract for, like, then that's probably the move you should make, right?
Yeah. No, and it gets – whatever. We'll see it. We're becoming familiar with these names. Like, Colin Murray-Boyles might be there at 16, but it feels like – it is funny. ESPN today, I don't know if you've seen this, had a mock draft, and they had the Grizzlies taking Jace Richardson. Now, he is a small point guard, and it would seem like the last thing they would need when they already have a Scottie Pippen there, right? But it is whatever. Who knows how this will play out? In terms of the trading back thing, Chris, it was something that Hollinger brought up in his piece. One way to get off the money of John Conchar would be to, or Jay Huff, whatever, would be to trade back. You then have a smaller salary slot that you have to pay your draft pick, plus you've got off all, more money. It would seem that would not be emotionally satisfying as a fan. I can just tell you that. But do you think that's a reasonable one? Another way this could go?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Well, I think if they want to do the renegotiation and extend with Jaren, which I think they want to do, I think they need to clear more salary. I suspect they need to clear more salary. I suspect that moving the Conchar salary into open space is the main thing they need to do. They may need to do a little bit more, but that's kind of the main thing they need to do. I guess in theory they could move the Cole Anthony contract into space or for a half the size or whatever. But I think Conchar is the most likely. I'd said on the show before, I didn't think they should and also didn't think they would use a first round pick to do that. Now, that's easier to do now because they have all these extra first round picks, but I still don't think they would or should do that. But if you're moving from 16 to 22 or 16 to 19 or something like that to get off the salary, that's really not much different value wise than like sending two seconds to do it. It's kind of the same kind of thing. And so that's strictly a decision that would be based on who do we think we're getting when we move back? And is that a guy we might have taken at 16 anyway, right? I think if moving back to do that costs you like a tier of players or really changes the value you think you're going to get out of that pick, I don't think that would be a good move to make. But like, all we're going to know is like what they tell us, right? When they do it, and what they're going to say is like, we got the guy we wanted to take anyway, right? But I think if I'm so set aside the PR, just in the reality, I would not move back if it was really going to fundamentally change what I thought I was getting out of the draft. I would rather send like 5 seconds or 4 seconds or whatever to do it. But I do think if you can, if you feel like it doesn't fundamentally change what you're getting out of the draft and you can move back a few spots and get off the money, I think that's very much a thing they might do.
Right. If you think you're in the same tier of players or whatever, the player you really like will think you'll be there, et cetera. Hey, by the way, still have 2 seconds. They're not going to pick 3 players. Do we agree that they're not unlikely?
Well,
to pick
they might pick players. They're just not going to put them on the 15-man roster. They got three two ways, right?
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Only one of those guys is going to be back in a 2-way. So if you take players at 48 and 56, then like those are two of your 2-ways. That seems like a perfectly reasonable thing to do to me.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to pick guys at those spots and put them on the 15-man roster. Unless you get those guys in the summer league and suddenly it's like, oh my God, this guy's Tamani Kamara, who was pick 52. Like, if that happens, sure, but that won't be your plan.
Right. So you have a whole column of trade targets, and I may harvest some of it another day. But before I get to that, you did mention...
Hopefully we'll have a little bit of time on it to harvest things over multiple days.
Yeah,
I was annoyed because I am literally...
right.
I tweeted this out, but I literally slacked to David Boyd, the sports editor. Here's the pieces I'm doing, and one of them, which was going to be basically tomorrow, was going to be titled, like, you know, is there a logic in trading Desmond Bain? And then they beat me to the punch by 3 days.
Yeah. So I did wonder, because I knew that, and I did wonder, when I read your trade target piece today, I'm like, Chris normally, like, sort of doles things out. Like, did you rush that? Like, is that faster than you normally would have because you think this stuff could be happening? I was surprised your trade targets came out this early.
No, it was more like literally the draft is next week.
Right.
And so I wanted to do all of the off-season stuff. I'll do a reset column after the draft based on what they do at the draft. But I wanted to do all the off-season preview stuff, and I still haven't written about Santi. I wanted to do all that between last week and this week, then I'll probably write something draft related for Monday. So there were only so many days left between now and the draft to get all that in. And once they did the Bane trade, that created this new thing to write about because now they do have all these assets that they could trade, you know, starting now, and they may well trade some of them. I actually think they should be pretty aggressive in trying to do something. Like, I don't think they should just hold their powder completely. I think they should be pretty aggressive looking for something to do, including some of the stuff I wrote about in that column. And so it was less like, I think something's about to happen than like, I got a week to get all this in, so let's do it. Plus, it was, you know, people were interested in the main thing because it just happened.
Yeah. So before I get to that, though, the all the conversation yesterday about, and you saw this again, literally on First Take, there was a whole, should the Grizzlies pivot off Ja Morant? So I did want to just touch on this. I think you've said it, and everyone has said it. Their intention is to remake the team around Jaren and Ja, not to rebuild and blow it up. But it can.
Yeah, I want to be clear. I want to be clear about this, though.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to push back at the idea that this team could be headed towards a rebuild because that's possible.
Right.
But that is not the goal. I think it's true that this trade is pretty interesting in that it carves ahead on two different paths. If you want to have a different kind of team built around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson, this is a step towards doing that. If you get to the point where you do feel like you need to blow it all up and start over, it's a lot easier to do that now. You've sort of pushed forward in that road too. I think not only is it true that this trade could pivot in either of those directions, I think they understand that. I think they know that it could pivot in either of those directions. But their goal, their plan, right, is to pivot into one direction. And but I really think what happens with the Jaron contract stuff, which has been looming over the whole summer, like is still looming over the whole summer.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because in the end, that their intention can be one thing, but these two contract situations, really.
Yep.
So with Jaron, if Jaron came back and said, I'm not going to renegotiate and extend, and not only that, my plan is to go to free agency and see what's out there for me, they would be silly not to see what's available for Jaron Jackson Jr., right?
Yes, 100%.
And what happens? So that one's, and we don't know. Like we don't know what that will look like. But then the other one is Ja, because there is this discussion, and we know he's changed agents and whatever. There's just this discussion that they could extend Ja. Is that another potential one? Ja could want an extension. They could not give him an extension. They could like whatever.
Yeah.
Is that?
Go
ahead.
I've talked about this on your show and on the pod. I haven't written about it at this point, not because I'm trying to hide from it, just because there are so many other things that are definitely going to be issues, and this may or may not be an issue. So Ja is still under contract for 3 more seasons. He is extension eligible. At a certain point, you become eligible for an extension. It's not common, like a guy with 3 years left on his contract gets an extension added on to that. And so it would be entirely rational for that just not to happen this summer.
Right.
And either way, like, he's under contract next season and for the next 3, so it's just not as pressing as the Jaron thing. But to the point of your question, he is eligible for an extension. It'd be a 2-year extension that would max out at something like $120 to $130 million over 2 more years. Is there a situation this summer, and I don't know that there will be, but just to game it out, is there a situation this summer where one of the two sides, meaning Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies, wants to do an extension and one of the two sides does not want to do an extension? And if that is the case, could friction around not doing an extension lead to something? All of that is possible. I'm not telling you that's going to happen. I think it's unlikely to happen. But is it possible as you start gaming stuff out and like this, then this, then this, then this, it gets to that point? There are permutations of things that could lead to that point. Yes.
Right. So your belief is the intent is to build around both of them, but there are 2 real pressure points that could cause before another game is played. Because when they originally traded Shane for Rudy, I didn't think they were going to – like they were trying to get younger and better around Powell. And then Powell gets hurt, Mike Fratello gets fired – and they, you know, here literally the pivot could happen this summer.
Point. And then having Rudy made it easier to pivot towards the rebuild because you had this young guy, right?
Right.
So it's a similar kind of situation. Like, it does give you avenues.
Yeah.
But I do believe, like, their idea is to recalibrate the team around Ja Morant and Jaron Jackson Jr. And hiring Isolo has been a tell in all of this because they want to play a certain style that caters to Ja Morant, right?
Right.
And bringing in Zach Edey caters to that style. I think it's been very clear all the way that they really want to do a new deal with Jaron. Now that takes 2. So I think it's pretty clear that the team does want to move forward with Ja Morant and Jaron Jackson. But there are to use your language, which is good, there are pressure points there.
Yeah. Well, okay, the homework for you people out there is to read Chris's trade targets piece, and we'll talk about the particulars of it tomorrow. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. If you're selling your house, Josh Hysaw would be the person to call. Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty knows the market, knows how, whatever the market, whatever the whatever's happening in the market, knows how to sell your house. He's aggressive. He markets. I met with him. You meet with him. You'll see for yourself. But among other things, if you are thinking of going the route of taking an instant cash offer, there are reasons to do that. You don't have to get your house ready for, you know, pour money into your house to get ready to go on the market. You don't have to have all these elaborate showings, any of that stuff. And if you want to do it, you don't respond to one of the robocalls that you're getting. Hey, would you like to sell your house? Or a text. I saw that you have. Well, no. You call Josh Hysaw, because unlike those other places, he will give you an offer that is for full market value. So the same convenience, only you're going to get the full price for your home. He will also, by the way, give you up to 4 months to move. It's an incredibly convenient way to do it. So if you're thinking about doing this, get in touch with Josh Heisa at joshhasthebuyers.com. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. Charles is the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon, also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for excellence in business writing. He's a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, and he had a couple of interesting experiences this past week. One is he went down to the mall to see tanks and stuff like that in Washington, D.C. And secondly, he also went a full day without his telephone. And I can only imagine, Charles, that was a very calming experience to be disconnected. And you can tell us we should all go 24 hours without access to our telephone.
Well, you guys remember that during the segment last week, we completely lost.
Oh, that's true.
Communications.
Comm failed. I do remember.
And,
it was very awkward. Very awkward. I got a little testy because we'd have you back, and then you were gone, and then you were back, and then you were gone. I found it irritating.
You did find it irritating, but you kept your cool. Jeffrey was in kind of a panic because he was calling back, and my phone wasn't even ringing. And that was sort of the last straw. The phone had been doing that. You and I would have that experience every day during one of our 7 calls. I certainly had that experience calling my wife. I have AppleCare. I pay every month for, unlimited support. Long story short, I ended up, despite having the lovely golden AppleCare, I ended up going almost 24 hours without my phone. It made me jittery, jumpy, and completely unhappy. I use my phone for everything. I read books on my phone. I read the news on my phone. I follow the stock market on my phone. When I walk the dogs, I read the newspaper. I've been doing that. You may or may not remember. In college, I would walk from one end of Cambridge to the other, from my dorm to my job, every day with the New York Times folded up. And so I would hold it in my hand, fold it up, reading one story at a time, and occasionally looking up to make sure I didn't hit anybody. People thought I was insane. And so being without my – and that's not to say Twitter, email. Being without my phone, my alarm clock. I literally used my regular alarm clock, which, in fact, I've had since, 1986. It still sits on my bedside table 6 moves later. But I did not like it. I just want to say, no, I did not like it. I'm not going to recommend anything to you. I could spend a lot less time online. But it made me irritated, and my experience with Apple was not happy. But today's segment will not be interrupted.
One of the things in all of this that you pointed out is when you have problems with your phone, what happens is everyone wants to blame everybody else, right? Like if you contact Apple, they'll blame AT&T.
The first thing they did was say, you may pay $15 a month for unlimited Apple service. but have you talked to AT&T about this problem? Then I had to spend 10 minutes convincing them that I absolutely knew it was not an AT&T problem. And that's so, you're right, that is so irritating. Take responsibility. This thing is expensive, and I also pay for support. I don't want you to tell me to go talk to somebody else.
Yeah, want to tell us really briefly what the scene was in D.C. when you went down there on Saturday?
I mean, I went down there. I went because I felt like it was a big event. You know, I'm 6 miles, 7 miles from the mall, in the National Mall in Washington, D.C. To be honest, it was like the biggest. It was like somebody at the Cuyahoga County Fair in Ohio, or the Erie County Fair in New York, or the Dade County Fair in Miami, where I grew up, had invited the Army to put up a, you know, come have a piece of equipment and put up a career day. There were helicopters, there were Blackhawks, there were Apaches, there were troop carriers and mobile missile launchers.
Was there a massive crowd? Was there a massive crowd? You didn't stay for the parade.
The crowd was so modest that it was much less crowded than those spaces would normally have been on a June Saturday, in part because the security line to get into, and then there were all these career tents. Do you want to be a medic for the Army? Do you want to be a radar operator for the Army? Do you want to be an electronics technician for the Army? Do you want to be a helicopter repair technician? You could go visit those people. And I actually think that's cool. And I'm kind of alone in my somewhat cynical family. I think the military is a good step for many, many people. It gives you discipline. It gives you good habits. It can give you good skills. Put aside how we, the political people, use the military does a good job with the people who enlist and need to learn skills on how to become an adult. It took 35 minutes to get through security. Standing in line in what was at that point the hottest day we'd had so far. And then, to be honest, the exhibits were underwhelming. They were completely underwhelming, you know? Okay. And by the way, we all know it's nice. The Apache helicopter, the one we were looking at was 16 or 18 years old, right? This is not the latest and greatest stuff.
The latest, then you just need to have a drone parade. Right. They just need to have a drone parade. Yeah.
And you know what? There was no tent where you could enlist to learn to design and operate drones. And that's clearly going to be where we go. So anyway, and by the way, I also had a very brief, lovely experience with a fan of the show who came to Washington. And it just made me think it's nice. It's nice to, you know, people out there know us. They know you. It's nice to meet people. We should have a live event, man. We should do Fish on Friday, on Tuesday,
live. You know what we'll need to do that? A very small venue. You know what we'll need? We'll need a very small venue for the Fish on Friday, on Tuesday live event.
I think we should invite the sponsors of the show,
right,
the enthusiastic sponsors of the show, and see if they want to go live.
Exactly. Right. That's perfect. Okay. Let's get to the list.
Let's just say one thing. All joking aside, what happened in Minnesota and Minneapolis over the weekend, there's literally no words for that. They now know what the state senator and his wife actually realized, that the guy who came to the door at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. Was impersonating a police officer. They said, "You're a fake police officer." And still he was able to gun them down. What does it mean when you can't trust that the person at your door at 2 a.m. with a car with lights who says he's a police officer is a police officer?
And what does it mean when you decide to serve the public and you get gunned down in your own home? I mean, it's just absolutely appalling.
Right.
It's,
but also then, And in the other direction, too, we are now casting suspicion on everybody who's dressed as a police officer. Are they real? Are they not? You know, I don't know how you go about catching somebody in a police vehicle dressed as a police officer by using the police. Right. That the whole thing is evil. And just a word about, you know, the what's going on between Israel and Iran. You said it's full-fledged war. It's not really full-fledged war quite yet. It's mostly an air and missile war. the main nuclear facility that produces uranium for Iran, Fordo, here's how deep it is. It is buried 30 stories down in a mountain, between 25 and 30 stories. So to go to work there, you take an elevator down 25 stories. That's kind of insane. We are the only country in the world that has a bomb that could possibly reach that facility. All that facility does is produce weapons-grade uranium. That's its job. And even we would have to drop, they said, 3 or 4 bunker busters into the same exact coordinates, into the same hole to get to it. The Iranians have in the last 2 days been asking for mercy, been asking to stop this insanity that in some ways they're
the way they stop it is to say we will stop enriching uranium, right? And they have not been willing to do that.
Here, we'll focus on our economy and our people, and we will not feel the need to have a nuclear weapon, and we will not feel the need to threaten to have a nuclear weapon. And here, you can have the facility and take it over. I don't know how that's going to go, but that is they built it to last. And the only people in the world who can deliver those bombs are us. No one in the world but the United States has the weapon, and we can't simply ship the weapon to Israel and let them deliver it, because each bomb weighs 30,000 pounds. And there's only one or two military planes in the world, the B-52 and the B-2, that can deliver that bomb. So it would have to be an American pilot in an American plane. And so let's hope everybody picks a different path.
All right. We have a we have some economic news. College grads, not the best time.
Let's connect all three of these things.
Yep.
College graduates, their unemployment rate right now, this is people between the ages of 20 and 24 who have a college degree, their unemployment rate is 6.6%. That's the highest it's been in 10 years. So it's still not terrible.
I'm actually surprised it's not higher than that. I'm surprised not 30%, the way, you know, you sort of look around.
But if you're newly unemployed, well, and there's all kinds of, you know, details about how unemployment is calculated. The regular national employment rate is 4.2. But the unemployment rate for college grads between 35 and 44, 10 years older, is 2.2%, a third. So, and the gap between the national unemployment rate and the employment rate for college grads is bigger than it's been in 35 years. And you know why? You know why? Because entry-level hiring has fallen 17% since before the pandemic. People are hiring grown-ups with skills still. That unemployment rate, 2.2%, is full employment. That means anybody who wants a job over the age of 35 and has a college degree and wants one, has a job. But the gap is the biggest it's been in 35 years. And I would bet you that part of the reason entry-level people are not being hired is because of our old friend AI. So that's, if you're having trouble finding a job, that's why. The unemployment rate for people with a high school diploma who are the same age is 14.5%. So as bad as it is for new college grads, if you haven't gone to college, your unemployment rate is twice.
Why AI? Isn't it just because people are uncertain about the economy, so they don't want to hire people who they can't really, who aren't productive right now? They just have to train them because they'll be productive in a growing economy within a year, 6 months.
It's both. You're continuing to hire people who can get the work done. New college grads require a certain amount of investment, but also we don't really know how to use AI. But the work that AI is doing at law firms, at investment firms, at coding companies is the work that entry-level people could do. Entry-level hiring is only down 17%. But if hiring in America were down 17%, we'd be in the depths of a recession that was like the Great Depression. Okay.
And you wanted to connect this particular headline to two others?
Two more stories. One is Microsoft does a study using its own data with Outlook and Teams and all of the tools that it offers of of employment trends and workplace trends. And here's what they reported this year. Many fewer people are working fully remote than even a year ago, and certainly than 2 or 3 years ago. Right now, 1 in 10 of us get to work fully remote all the time. That's more than double before the pandemic, 10%. Mm-hmm. 20% are hybrid. I think that number is actually low. I think more than 20% of people get to stay home a day or two a week and do their work there. But the number of people working between 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. is jumping. The number of meetings, on Teams, on their online platform, after 8 p.m. Eastern time is up 16% compared to a year ago. And the number of people logging on to their email between 5 and 10 p.m., again, this is Microsoft, but representative, is 1/3 of all workers logging on to their email. Couple of interesting.
I log on to my Odyssey email. I'm very good, Jeffrey, aren't I, about checking my Odyssey email now.
You are.
I got my hand slapped because I didn't get on the Odyssey email. I have so damn many emails, and now my work.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I want to give you the data.
Yeah.
Microsoft says the average person gets 117 work-related emails a day. That is one every 10 minutes, 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. 117 work-related emails, 153 work-related chat messages a day. Think about that. If you
basically had 300 messages a day. That's a full day's work just responding to the messages or ignoring the messages that you get every day,
or even just looking at them. And then so people working at night are doing work, right?
Right.
If you can carry the load, maybe I don't need to hire that one person that's missing. Or maybe I leave the job that comes open. I don't promote and replace it at the bottom. That's putting pressure on the college kids. One more data point. This happened last week. We just didn't get to it. Amazon announced last Tuesday, in fact, exactly a week ago, that it was opening 2 new data centers in Pennsylvania. It was huge hubbub from the Trump administration, from the governor of Pennsylvania, from Amazon. 2 new data centers, one being built on the campus of a nuclear power plant to get tap right into the electricity. Those 2 new data centers are $20 billion in construction and computing equipment. You guys familiar with that?
Yeah.
With xAI in Memphis. They're only creating 1,200 permanent jobs. 10,000 construction jobs to build the $20 billion in data centers, followed by 1,200 new jobs. Here's a comparison. Blue Oval, which is this huge Ford facility being built near Memphis, which I think is really important and is going to be an important part of the Memphis economy 10 years from now, a battery and car facility. Blue Oval is costing $5.6 billion and producing 6,000 jobs. A quarter of the money, 4 times the jobs. Data centers, again, it's an AI play. The computers don't need people to watch them. They certainly don't need people in the building. And so those announcements come with a little bit of a caveat.
Do you still get cable TV, Fishman?
Of course I do. I'm a cable. We get cable. Our cable comes from Verizon. Every 4 years, I call Verizon and negotiate a lower price by cutting off some. You and I have this experience. I'll say, how do I watch this? You say, just turn on TBS. We don't get TBS anymore. How did that
happen? Okay, but you are now in the minority, right?
You're counting this wrong. In May, a huge benchmark was reached. Okay. For the first time in history, over the course of an entire month, the number of hours in America watched on streaming services was larger than the number of hours watched on cable and broadcast. 45% of all hours last month watched on streaming, Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, Disney Plus, all that. 44% watched on cable and broadcast. 1%, but it's over. It's over now. And here's how dramatically it has changed. Just in 2021, after the pandemic, 67% of all hours on cable and broadcast, 26% on streaming.
Wow.
Cable is melting. Cable is melting. And now older viewers, people over 65, using YouTube on their TVs, watch as much streaming as kids under 11. People over 65.
Times, they are changing. It's going to be someday we're not even going to have bright red jello, Charles. Someday we're not even going
to. We have two items we didn't even get to touch.
We can't get to them.
We'll get you next week.
The music. The music. But a hint. One of them involves jello. Fishman, thanks, Fishman. Appreciate it. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson joins them today. Tim Murray will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.